The Injured Senior Podcast is here to help. Like it or not, the senior and elderly population is vulnerable to negligence committed by medical professionals, nursing homes, assisted living facilities, pharmaceutical and medical device companies, insurance companies, and everyday individuals and businesses. Your host, Steve Heisler, creator of the National Injured Senior Law Center, has been advocating for seniors' rights for over 30 years and is bringing you answers to your questions. This is the Injured Senior Podcast.
This is Steve Heisler, and you are listening to the Injured Senior Podcast, and I am talking to Dr. Pam Teester, who is an expert in public guardianships. Pam, let me ask you this. Why should people who are listening to this podcast, why should they be concerned about public guardianships?
That's a really nice question, because I think a lot of people don't even know it exists. I know when I was a graduate student and I decided that this would be the area I'd do my research on, my major professor went, the state can do that? So even people who were fairly knowledgeable about all the functions of government didn't know about this peculiar function. And why should you care? Because there are a number of people who are under guardianship in this country, probably more than we even know about because of the records issue. And it is a significant loss of civil rights. Some scholars say it can unperson someone, but it is also a really important state function that deserves oversight because of the significant loss of rights. However, it also preserves the remaining ones individuals have.
So what type of civil rights are you talking about?
When the guardianship is total or plenary, it's everything. So it in effect reduces an adult to the legal status of a child. So can't vote, can't marry, can't direct your own health care, can't contract. It's pretty significant when it is a guardianship for the person and the property.
Yeah, we had Dr. Sam Sugar on last week. Talked about just professional guardianships and guardianships in general and how the civil rights are totally just eliminated. And it's really atrocious, and it's very alarming.
Steve, it is very atrocious and alarming when it is done poorly. And I know Dr. Sugar, and I'm in contact with him, going to speak at one of his summits for a little bit. When it is not done well and appropriately, it is atrocious. But on the other hand, it is the beneficent authority of the state to come in and take care of a person who cannot make decisions for him or herself. And so in the protective function of the state, it is doing a wonderful favor to people. And in fact, for many people, it improves their quality of life. So it's not an evil dragon unless it's done wrong, or evil dragons are doing the guardianship.
No, that makes sense. My question is, are you seeing more of the former or the latter?
You know, I've done a bit of research on bad guardians. I've done a lot of research on financial exploitation. I was recently funded by the Retirement Research Foundation to look at surrogate perpetrators. And I am just not seeing huge numbers of exploiting, abusing, and neglecting guardians.
That's
now,
really good news.
That the sources that I do my research with are not catching those cases. And we know abuse, neglect, and exploitation is underreported a lot. So I'll say that up front because I know it as a researcher and I know it as a philosopher. But on the other hand, we even ran studies longer to try to see more of it, and it just wasn't reported. The dragons in the surrogate perp study are the powers of attorney.
Really? So it's the powers of attorney, and usually a power of attorney is a family member, right?
That's correct. And if you read much research on elder abuse, you will know that the predominant relationship of people who are abusing are family members.
Yeah, we've had Paul Greenwood on the show to talk about that. And yeah, he even gives like a profile of, you know, the typical abuser of an elderly person. And it's usually, you know, like a 40-year-old son. But you know, that's something that we talked about on another episode. Okay, so let me ask you this. The guardians themselves, now you said some were sheriffs, but now
I really don't think any state has a sheriff still as a guardian. This was just the case in Virginia before the law changed.
Got it. So who right now, who is usually chosen as a guardian, or how do you, how do they?
As a public guardian? Pick?
Yes, as a public guardian.
These are the individuals who are actually public servants. They're people who are employed by the state and at least to serve in this capacity as a public guardian. Important to stress that it is not the individual state employee who is the guardian. The guardian, and this is really important about public guardianship, the guardian becomes the state. So the public guardian program is the named guardian. That's an important distinction from perhaps a paid professional guardian or family member who's a guardian, because it would mean that your friend Bob Smith, who is a government employee, might leave the service of government, but the guardianship would remain with the state. So that's the important distinction, and that's an important good thing.
Great. Now I understand that. So is it normally like someone from Adult Protective Services, or is there like a department for for public guardians?
Yes. For example, in Virginia, there's a Virginia Public Guardian and Conservator program, and it is housed in the Department of Aging and Rehabilitative Services. They're sort of often housed in that ilk of a bureau or a department within state government. APS can serve as a guardian in some states. Like, for example, I know, having done some research in the state of New York, which really doesn't have a public guardian program, that APS in some counties or jurisdictions serves as the guardian. But I have a problem with it philosophically.
And why is that?
Why? Because the function of APS, and I study APS a lot. I'm beholden to them all for a lot of studies. APS function is to investigate abuse, neglect, and exploitation. So that's a big job, and that is what APS should do. It should not be in the business of surrogate decision making. And another philosophical reason would be you shouldn't appoint a state actor who then could not report on him or herself if they were nefarious, right? So it's a big old conflict of interest.
Right. So there's not really any good oversight over guardian, some Adult Protective Services. Would that be accurate?
It's certainly not the best arrangement. But I'm sure Dr. Sugar would have said, guardians are in short supply, and therein lies one of the problems of guardianship.
Right. So you don't have a large pool to pick from.
No. And as you might imagine, people who are persons under public guardians are not easy cases. These are real complex cases when they come to the public guardian.
That's a good point.
Often people have no money too. And so there's no way to pay somebody much for serving as a public guardian. You'd want to try to keep people out of the public guardian program if you possibly could. But on the other hand, there wouldn't be much money to attach to a person who has none.
That makes sense. And thank you for that. Someone wanted to contact you to maybe discuss some of the issues we talked about today. What's the best way to reach you?
I think the best thing to do would be able to, one of two things. One would be to call the Center for Gerontology at Virginia Tech. And all you have to do is look on a website at Virginia Tech Center for Gerontology, and there it will be. And our wonderful operations coordinator will find me and get me a message. The less reliable, although possible, thing to do is you can easily Google me. There I'll be. Some picture, who knows how many years ago, but I probably still look like that. If you can find my email address, you're welcome to email me. Once in a while, I lose them because I get a lot of them. So that's why I would say if you have a burning question, call, because I know my operations coordinator will get to me with that. Less reliable, but still, I get about 300 or 400 emails a day. I'll usually get to as many as I can in a day.
300 to 400 emails to the gerontology department?
No, to me.
Just to you?
Yes.
Wow. Well, that's about 300 to 400 more emails than I get.
300 less than you get, Steve.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you've been doing this a long time, so I guess that's a testament to your good work. People, they want to get some good information, and you're the person to see about that. All right, Pam. Well, thanks again for being on the show, and we're going to have you back soon.
Steve, thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it. Keep doing your good work.
I appreciate it. Injured Senior and Aging Population Community, thanks for listening to today's episode. I want to again thank Dr. Pamela Teester for appearing on the show today. She did a wonderful job and just so much great information. If you love the Injured Senior podcast, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes. If you want to share a story that you have about guardianship or any type of elder abuse, we would be happy to talk to you and possibly have you come on the show to tell us about your experience. Or if you just have any suggestions or comments about the show, you can email me at steve@injuredseniorpodcast.com. I definitely respond to all emails and would love to chat with you or exchange emails. So until next time, I am so looking forward to next week's show, my friends. It was so great to spend some time with you. Stay safe, and I will talk to you soon. Goodbye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Injured Senior Podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate, subscribe, review, and share on Apple, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. Connect with us at InjuredSeniorPodcast.com and sign up for our newsletter. To find out more or to get help at any time, visit InjuredSeniorPodcast.com or call 855-622-6530. That's 855-622-6530.